Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
...97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good morning. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show on Tuesday, the 27th day of August. And throat's a little scratchy this morning. Not quite sure why. I apologize for that. I will try to work that frog out as the morning goes on because clearly we got a lot of stuff to get to. We're talking debate. I told you yesterday there was Donald Trump was questioning whether or not he's going to go through with this debate, and it took the Kamala Harris team about an hour to put out an ad against him with a chicken clucking in the background. Did you hear that?
I didn't see it.
Accusing him of being afraid to debate her.
Says the woman who's not done a single media interview in how many weeks now?
Well, and you know... they had a serious conversation about this on CNN last night. A serious conversation about how brilliant it was for her to roll that ad out. And it was Scott Jennings, of all people, who said to him, I find it a little rich that you're accusing him of being a chicken when you won't sit down with a single journalist and answer questions about anything.
You mean her policies that she's yet to disclose?
What policies?
Yeah, exactly.
What policies would those be exactly? I don't know. I haven't seen that yet. So we'll see what happens with that. We're kind of keeping an eye on it. I got some sound on it for you this morning. A little later, we'll talk to Todd Pyro. I'm sure he's got some thoughts on that. Former Senator John Lamping, we're going to get him on here. We got Aiden Johnson from Gun Owners of America for 2A Tuesday. We got a good one for you here, I think. And then the stolen valor thing aside for just a moment on this Tim Walz character from Minnesota. Now there's another allegation of a misrepresentation on his resume. And we're going to talk to a political analyst, a guy who's with the Young Voices a little later, about 8:35, talking about this one that's been unearthed. And, you know, I don't know how much more damage they can do. This guy has, and I'm talking about Walz, was barely reelected in Minnesota. I didn't know that. I thought he was this immensely popular governor like Shapiro in Pennsylvania. He barely got reelected. I mean, he was one of these people that won because the population centers in Minneapolis and the one other big city in Minnesota turned out to vote for him, and he lost in the other 33 or 34 counties. I mean, he barely won reelection up there. He's not a popular governor in Minnesota, which now there's a question, is his weakness something that puts Minnesota in play for Donald Trump? I wouldn't be so bold as to say that because, you know, I remember when Walter Mondale only won one state against Ronald Reagan, and it was Minnesota, right? It was the only state that he won. It hadn't voted Republican in as long as I can remember. So I'm not holding my breath that there's a chance of that. But it is interesting that because it's something I didn't know.
Well, I wonder how many people would have voted for, say, RFK in Minnesota. I still think they would pick Kamala, like a liberal, over Trump. But that is an interesting point that you bring up. And maybe it will be more, maybe it'll be a closer race there.
He's still on the ballot. In the other states, I believe.
That's
I don't know
true.
If he's,
That's
I
true.
I don't know if he's on the ballot in every state, but he's going to leave his name on the ballot in a lot of the states, which I thought was a pretty interesting a twist for sure. All right. I tell you, we got a lot to get to. Let's go ahead and start with our top stories. Carl, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Everyday prices are too high. Food, rent, gas, back to school clothes. That is called Bidenomics.
Yeah, the Trump campaign is coming out with some pretty clever ads these days, too. That's one they're running in the swing states with Kamala Harris debating herself.
Why doesn't she do something like I'm doing right now? She can't talk. We can't have another dummy as a president, okay? We cannot have a dummy.
Yeah, I know some people who cringe when he says that, but I mean, what he's saying is comparing her to her current boss, Joe Biden, who's laying on a beach somewhere in Delaware, and we're not quite sure who's in charge of the country at this moment.
Joe Biden has been checked out for a long time, and Kamala Harris knew it the entire time. The only person that our adversaries fear less than Joe Biden is Kamala Harris.
Yeah, Mike Johnson with a great point, one that Jim Carafano has made on this show many, many times. Foreign leaders are anxious, particularly our enemies, to get Kamala Harris into office.
This administration has us facing multiple wars on multiple fronts and regions around the world, and closer to the brink of nuclear war than we ever have been.
Wow. How about that? See that coming?
I actually did. I'm not really surprised. Maybe this will help a little bit. I guess I feel like a lot of people think this is a bigger deal than I think it is.
Well,
she's not a Democrat anymore.
No,
she's an independent.
No.
She's already put out videos that clearly showed she was not a fan of Kamala Harris and that she was throwing her support behind Trump, which is funny because then when she, of course, yesterday officially endorsed him and said that she's going to back him and wants her supporters to back him, I'm like, oh, she hadn't already done that?
Well, go ahead and get mad at me. But as I watched that news conference, I couldn't help but have that longing feeling that I kind of wish he had picked her as his vice presidential candidate.
Which is shocking because I feel like you weren't a big fan of that combo.
I don't know, a month and a half ago. I was not, because she is still, she and I are apart on a lot of issues, I'm sure. But she is right out of central casting as to what he needed in his vice presidential role. It immediately takes the white suburban mom issue and turns it on its ear, right? She's from Hawaii. She served in the military for, what do they say, 20 years or 25 years or something like that. She's been in Congress. She's turned away from the Democrat Party because they're too extreme. It just would have neutralized so many of those complaints that the left in this country has against Donald Trump. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know that it would have done any harm to put her in that position. I like J.D. Vance. I do. But having, again, we don't do identity politics on the Republican side. But you can't ignore the facts that are on the ground right now that Trump has turned off suburban women over the years. And if you could do something to win those back, maybe the way, instead of getting a white guy from Ohio, you get Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii. And I mean, he's not going to win Hawaii. I don't think having her on the ticket would help him win Hawaii. It's been Democrat for years. But still, I think it would have been an attractive choice. Here was her comment yesterday. Go to cut five, Carl, please.
This administration has us facing multiple wars on multiple fronts and regions around the world, and closer to the brink of nuclear war than we ever have been before. This is one of the main reasons why I'm committed to doing all that I can to send President Trump back to the White House, where he can once again serve us as our commander in chief. Because I am confident that his first task will be to do the work to walk us back from the brink of war.
I do feel confident she'd be in his cabinet. I don't know what that position would be, but I feel good about the fact that she would have some role.
SecDef, you think?
I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know if she's qualified for that or not.
I mean, she's got the background, I guess.
Secretary of Defense is somebody who has been a general in the military, but not always.
Remind me what her rank was.
I think he said yesterday she was a lieutenant colonel. I think Donald Trump said that during his introduction of her, that when she was in the Hawaii National Guard or whatever it was she was in, or Army Reserves, that she rose to the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. Because his comment was, you should have led with that. In other words, if that's your rank when you're in the military, you should have led with that, not just leading people to believe you were, you know, just a grunt. You were an officer.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's true, I did not know that. But again, one more feather in her cap, so to speak, for her resume.
I mean, I thought that's
brilliant.
I thought Vance, I actually like J.D. Vance, and I think he's done a good job so far. But I do think Vance and Walls were interesting picks for both of them. I don't know if Trump was just trying to prove I'm not going after the identity politics that the Democrats so clearly, it's a very, very important to them, which is, well, I guess obviously you have Kamala, the, you know, female. So maybe she felt like she didn't need to pick a female. But I thought maybe she would, because she tried to make it extra historic, you know,
like Hillary, like
check as many boxes as she could.
Like Hillary, what she did was pick a milquetoast white male governor. Or a senator, in Hillary's case. It was Tim Kaine, who was an absolutely forgettable individual. And so is Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely forgettable individual. With a, in this case, questionable, very questionable record on some key social issues, and not popular in his own state. So an interesting choice. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Carl, who's bringing us the national anthem this morning?
The United States Marine Corps Band.
Well done.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
You know, the best way to start any morning off at work is when you walk in and your computer doesn't work. Can I just tell you that little inside my job this morning background for you? The computer that is immediately in front of me, the one I rely on to get to my sound bites and the internet, is completely not functioning at this moment. And that just makes me so happy.
Always a good start.
You know
today.
What does make me happy, though, is that we do have our debate watch party coming up on the 10th of September. And as I mentioned to you the other day, because we're friends, it's going to sell out because there's a capacity, and we are already past 2/3 of the way to that capacity.
Are we really?
So I would encourage you, if you want to attend, because there will be a cutoff because the fire department insists on it when we hit that number. You need to go to the website, 971talk.com, go under the events tab, and just register. It's free. You know, food and drink available for you to purchase when you're there. It's at Dave and Buster's. We're just all going to gather in the big room. Everybody from 97.1 minus Carl Middleman. He loves Vegas more than us. We'll be there. Yeah. And it'll be a good time, assuming the debate goes on, because now there seems to be some question about whether or not that's going to happen. Here's the chicken ad, Carl. There's a file in there that you can see that I can't, that says Kamala Trump chicken ad. If you could play that.
Why not debate her?
No way. But because they already know everything. They'll say, oh, Trump's, you know, not doing the debate. That's the same thing they say now. I mean, right now I say, why should I do a debate? I'm leading in the polls. And everybody knows her. Everybody knows me.
It's kind of funny. Well, I mean, to their credit, it's funny. But come on, Biden had all these rules. Remember, he wouldn't do it. He wanted to do it only on his terms. And Trump was like, any day, any time, any place, I'll be there. And he was.
And he agreed to those rules.
He agreed to it. So he's clearly not chicken.
He agreed to those rules. And now Kamala Harris's people want to change those
rules. Right, so that they can have the mics open.
Because if you go back and listen to her debate with Pence in that last election cycle, she gets her little snarky comments in while he's talking. Or if she gets interrupted when she's talking, she says, excuse me, Mr. Vice President, I'm not done. And, you know, she gets her little snarky. So she wants both mics to be open. She doesn't want that wall between them like Biden needed so that he wouldn't get confused if Trump was talking to him while he was trying to speak. They want those things taken away because they know it might be to the detriment of Donald Trump, who can't hold his tongue sometimes.
Right. I think that it's important that Trump actually has his mic muted. I think it was a really good thing for him for the Biden debate. I thought he just seemed more reserved. I mean, he was kind of forced to be more reserved because his mic was muted. But obviously, that's clearly why Kamala wants it unmuted, because she knows that he's going to just go on and on and on and probably say something. And she's like, as a woman, she's going to play the woman card.
You're just
misogynistic,
trying to interrupt me.
Yeah. Gaslighting me. You're steamrolling me. She's going to use that verbiage.
You're a racist. Don't talk down to me. I can hear it already.
What
don't
a sexist
mansplain
comment. Yeah. Mansplain.
I'm waiting. I'm sure she's practicing all of those lines depending on what he says. You're a liar, you're nasty, you know, something he's going to throw in there. So that's what the debate is. Here's what Scott Jennings had to say about it yesterday on CNN. He thinks there will be a debate.
He needs to debate because he's going to have to hold her to account for her record as vice president, her positions when she ran for president, her record in the Senate, because no one else is going to help him. And the idea that they're calling him chicken when she won't answer a single question, a hard question from a journalist right now, is a little rich to me. So, but I think they'll do it, and I think they both have reason to need to show up. They both have something to prove.
Yeah, that was a Scott Jennings dig at CNN, right? And the girl, I can't think of her name, who was interviewing him, the lady, because nobody else is going to help him. So he's got to be the one that points out she won't talk to anybody else, right? She won't. He needs this debate, and she needs this debate. I just say a little prayer that in debate prep, there is somebody Donald Trump respects enough to take their advice to say what he's going to say. And when she's speaking, keep his mouth shut.
Right.
And then when it's his turn again, say what he's going to say. And when she's speaking, keep your mouth shut. They just need to repeat that to him over and over and over again so he doesn't fall into that trap.
And answer the questions. I was irritated last time when they asked him about childcare costs, and he spent the time, you know, reaming
digging
Biden.
On something else.
Now,
yeah.
I get why he does that, but at the same time, those are issues a lot of people, the suburban moms, the suburban women he's trying to win over, they want the answer to that, you're not answering it.
You got to do it. What are we Kimming on a whim about this morning?
All the technology that these kids have in schools, in general,
phones,
all the things. How young is too young?
All right, coming up in just a minute. Stay tuned.
Kim on a whim.
Kim on a whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
With kids now being back in school, I'm guessing parents are feeling even more pressure to get their kids a cell phone. Because summer, you're outside at the pool and you're playing with your friends in the neighborhood and you might not be thinking about it as much. But then you go to school and the middle schoolers and maybe even some elementary school students have these cell phones they're walking around with. And
yes.
Then they come home and say, well, all my friends have them. I remember telling my parents that. And I got a cell phone when I was relatively young. I think I was in like 7th grade, but keep in mind, those were like a little Nokia phone that I could text with T9.
Hey, stop trying to play down your privilege.
And you had to pay for the text messages, which I went over all the time and owed my parents. And yes, I paid it if I went over. And I would play Snake. That was basically all you could do on your cell phone. It's nothing like what it is right now with the smartphones and all that. So that's the question. I mean, at what age should these kids be getting cell phones? Because more and more school districts are trying to crack down on cell phone policies in the classroom. And that's very difficult when a kid's used to being able to have access to their phone nonstop at home. And then you bring them to the classroom and they freak out. Now, I'm not saying I sit there and take all my advice by any means from the American Academy of Pediatrics, but according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, parents should wait until their kid's at least 13 years old before giving a smartphone. But I've heard from some parents who were saying kids as young as 9 and 10 are having cell phones. In fact, what really blew me away is that I've heard from parents who have said that schools, like sports teams that are affiliated with the schools, the coaches are using Snapchat.
That oh, Snapchat, no.
Yes. I not only did I hear it from parents, but I also was Googling it just out of curiosity, and there's a Reddit thread talking about how a high school coach is using and pushing Snapchat as a form, the main form of communication, said that her 15-year-old daughter feels like an outcast.
Wow.
That's the way kids are communicating now. So not only do you have to have a cell phone, but you have to have Snapchat, because that's the way that all these kids are apparently making plans to do things and communicating. So you're going to be left out of all of those plans now if not only do you have to have a cell phone, but again, you also have to have Snapchat. That is dangerous. It's easy for me to say that now when my son's like, you know, 18 months old. I get that. And I'm going to have to navigate this at some point. And I'm not looking forward to it.
I am not laughing at the fact that you've still got to navigate this. I just wonder how different it's going to be 12 years from now or 9 years from now when Easton hits that age, right? 11 years old. And you have to decide, do I let him have a cell phone or not? Because all of his friends have one.
I know.
In fact, they got one when they were in third grade because the age keeps dropping, right? I remember us telling our kids, you're not getting one before you're 12 or 13, 12. The only exception we made to that was our oldest, who was a swimmer and was swimming with a group of kids that were older than her because of her skill set. And she sometimes needed a ride from the pool to something else. And we didn't want her stranded there. So we gave her a cell phone a little earlier than we would have otherwise. You know if your kid is mature enough to handle that or not. She was, even though she did go way over on her texting one time and to the tune of $100 back when you got charged per text.
Yeah. Oh, I remember.
Yeah. She did do that once. And that's not really a thing anymore. But you have to make these decisions. You know, the challenge for parents, the way I look at it, is you're not just giving your kids a phone with access to social media, Instagram. What did you mention a minute
Snapchat.
Ago? Snapchat, which goes away immediately, so you can't, it's hard to keep track of who they're talking to or what they're snapping. The bigger challenge to me is that you're giving them a computer with access to the world in their hand. Pornography, chat rooms, all these things that you can't control. And I don't think a lot, I know parents are, most parents are aware of that, probably. I know there are some who aren't. And I think there's a little too much trust there. You need to go in and lock those things down.
Well, and I know there are ways you can set different boundaries, and there's even apps where you can more or less track what they're looking at. Like,
yeah.
I get all that, but kids are so savvy. I mean, you see a 3-year-old navigating an iPad probably better than I would at this point. I'm sure there are ways that they can figure that out. I guess I don't know for sure, but it's funny you bring that up. Okay, let's you know, look 10 years down the road, what's it going to look like? Because I found a story from ABC News from 2010, so 14 years ago,
yeah,
talking about the technology. And keep in mind, at that time, it would have been like, what? Do we have iPhones? I guess iPhones maybe were just coming out.
When
did they come out?
You know, Carl?
Well, they're about to announce number 16, so probably
I don't know.
2003?
They were still pretty new, because a lot of the video in this particular story I saw, people had like the Nokia phones or like the Palm Pilots or the BlackBerry.
Palm
like all I had a Palm Pilot. All of those things. So listen, this is a group of parents that ABC had come talk on like a panel, more or less, discussing what age kids should have a cell phone. Listen.
Right. I think that it is a distraction.
For what? A distraction for what, though?
They put the phone on silence, and then they just text each other, and it's the new passing notes in the classroom.
Did you mean to tell me that you haven't developed your child to be have the discipline to not do that?
Yeah, because kids are kids. That's what I'm trying to say.
And that would be my argument, too. Yeah, you can put boundaries in place, but kids are kids.
But who thinks they have that much control over their children when they're at school, that you've taught them the discipline not to do that? Of course they're going to do that if they've got access to the technology. That's why I support personally, and I know the schools will never do it because they don't have discipline in schools anymore, is one of two things. Either no phones are allowed in the classroom, Or I've heard the argument, but what if there's an emergency and my kid needs to contact me? You put those little lockers right inside of each door. The kids, when they come into the classroom, they turn their phone off and they stick it in that locker. Teacher watches each one of them with their name on it. Everybody's phone is in there. And if you're caught with it outside of that locker without teacher's permission, you're going to the office. And that ends that problem. It ends one of the problems anyway.
I would agree with that. I think putting it in like a bucket at the beginning of the classroom when you walk in, I think is a good idea. But I can just see the argument that they would try to make, which is, well, then we have to take classroom time away from teaching, and we have to allocate more time at the end of that particular period, because now we're going to have to go sort through all the phones out of the bucket and make sure each person has their correct phone. Like, I can just hear the way that they would sit there and try to spin that and be like, this is impossible. How dare you sit there and try to say we should do this?
And when referring back to that individual, you'd have to probably use the correct pronouns, if I had to guess. Whoever
them or...
Well, whoever the snowflake is that would complain about that. Kids do not need cell phones in classrooms specifically. Even if you're still letting them use them in the hallway in their brief 4-minute break between classes. I'm completely opposed to that idea. What parent would go up and argue? I'd love to know. Leave us a listener comment. If you've got an opinion on this and you're a parent or you've come across it recently, what possible argument could there be for kids to have access to their phones during the entire school day? I'd love to know, because I can't imagine what it is. Are there occasionally emergencies? I'm certain there are. Are there phones in the office? Yes. They can go to the front desk like we used to.
Email.
And say, I need to call my mom.
Or you can just do the original, which was, you know, you pass a note and you would, that's like the original text messaging. I would fold my note all fancy and pass it. Or you take your graphic calculator and you would type, you know what I mean? Remember that? Am I?
You're right, boobies.
Or that, Carl. Or
what,
that.
What
that's what Carl was doing with his graphic calculator.
I don't know. I'm just saying that was like
Shell.
Another.
Shell oil.
Yeah, remember that one? Yeah.
With boobies.
Wow. Those were the days, huh?
Yeah, so go to the Odyssey app and click the microphone and leave us your comment on that. How did you handle that? I'd love to know. We'll play some of those back. I think zero phones in the classroom.
I agree.
Figure out a way to leave them in your locker. You can go out there in your break in your 4 minutes if you can make it back to your locker and check them, but they are not allowed in the classroom.
iPhones developed in 2003, not released till 2007.
Okay, so 7, 8, I was close.
I know kids will always have them probably in the school. Whether or not they're allowed in classrooms is different, but I would even support probably not even having them at school. I don't know. I just think we've completely gone overboard with phones. Everyone's addicted to a degree, probably myself included. I'm not going to pretend I'm above. I check my phone more than I'd like to admit.
Oh, yeah. We're all addicted to it these days.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a link to the world. I can't.
Yeah.
I find myself grabbing it for no reason and just checking to see if I've gotten any new messages or there's any breaking news somewhere in the world.
Like, think about the last time you sat at a stoplight and just sat there and just stared ahead.
No, you don't do that.
No, you look at your phone.
Yeah. You're not looking around. It's a problem. All right, we'll get to your comments. Doesn't have to be on that issue, but if you've got a thought on the debate with Trump and what he needs to do, just leave us a message. Carl will get it immediately down here. We will listen to it off the air, and then we'll pick the ones that we're going to play. So go ahead and do that. We'll take a look at it coming up here in just a couple of minutes. All right, we're going to be back right after this.
Look, you can talk about maybe she should have had more guts about this or that and the other, but we're the president.
Right.
And Trump's not the president, and we're the president, and now it's going to be about this. But this is about winning. What most people don't give the Democrats enough credit for, all right, but we give the Republicans.
Kim on a whim.
Kim on a whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
With kids now being back in school, I'm guessing parents are feeling even more pressure to get their kids a cell phone. Because summer, you're outside at the pool and you're playing with your friends in the neighborhood and you might not be thinking about it as much. But then you go to school and the middle schoolers and maybe even some elementary school students have these cell phones they're walking around with. And then they come home and say, well, all my friends have them. I remember telling my parents that. And I got a cell phone when I was relatively young. I think I was in like seventh grade. But keep in mind, those were like a little Nokia phone that I could text with T9.
Hey, stop trying to play down your privilege.
And you had to pay for the text messages, which I went over all the time and owed my parents. And yes, I paid it if I went over. And I would play Snake. That was basically all you could do on your cell phone. It's nothing like what it is right now with the smartphones and all that. So that's the question. I mean, at what age should these kids be getting cell phones? Because more and more school districts are trying to crack down on cell phone policies in the classroom. And that's very difficult when a kid's used to being able to have access to their phone nonstop at home. And then you bring them to the classroom and they freak out. Now, I'm not saying I sit there and take all my advice by any means from the American Academy of Pediatrics, but according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, parents should wait until their kid's at least 13 years old before giving a smartphone. But I've heard from some parents who were saying kids as young as 9 and 10 are having cell phones. In fact, what really blew me away is that I've heard from parents who have said that schools, like sports teams that are affiliated with the schools, the coaches are using Snapchat. Yes. I not only did I hear it from parents, but I also was Googling it just out of curiosity. And there's a Reddit thread talking about how a high school coach is using and pushing Snapchat as a form, the main form of communication, said that her 15-year-old daughter feels like an outcast.
Wow.
That's the way kids are communicating now. So not only do you have to have a cell phone, but you have to have Snapchat, because that's the way that all these kids are apparently making plans to do things and communicating. So you're going to be left out of all of those plans now if not only do you have to have a cell phone, but again, you also have to have Snapchat. That is dangerous. It's easy for me to say that now when my son's like, you know, 18 months old. I get that. And I'm going to have to navigate this at some point. And I'm not looking forward to it.
I am not laughing at the fact that you've still got to navigate this. I just wonder how different it's going to be 12 years from now or 9 years from now when Easton hits that age, right? 10, 11 years old. And you have to decide, do I let him have a cell phone or not? Because all of his friends have one.
I know.
In fact, they got one when they were in third grade because the age keeps dropping, right? I remember us telling our kids, you're not getting one before you're 12 or 13, 12. The only exception we made to that was our oldest, who was a swimmer and was swimming with a group of kids that were older than her because of her skill set. And she sometimes needed a ride from the pool to something else. And we didn't want her stranded there. So we gave her a cell phone a little earlier than we would have otherwise. You know if your kid is mature enough to handle that or not. She was, even though she did go way over on her texting one time and to the tune of $100 back when you got charged per text. She did do that once, and that's not really a thing anymore, but you have to make these decisions. You know, the challenge for parents, the way I look at it, is you're not just giving your kids a phone with access to social media, Instagram, what did you mention a minute
Snapchat,
which goes away immediately, so you can't, it's hard to keep track of who they're talking to or what they're snapping. The bigger challenge to me is that you're giving them a computer with access to the world in their hand. Pornography, chat rooms, all these things that you can't control. And I don't think a lot, I know parents are, most parents are aware of that, probably. I know there are some who aren't. And I think there's a little too much trust there. You need to go in and lock those things down.
Well, and I know there are ways you can set different boundaries, and there's even apps where you can more or less track what they're looking at. Like,
yeah.
I get all that, but kids are so savvy. I mean, you see a three-year-old navigating an iPad probably better than I would at this point. I'm sure there are ways that they can figure that out. I guess I don't know for sure, but it's funny you bring that up. Okay, let's you know, look 10 years down the road. What's it going to look like? Because I found a story from ABC News from 2010, so 14 years ago.
Yeah,
talking about the technology. And keep in mind, at that time, it would have been like what? Do we have iPhones? I guess iPhones maybe were just coming out.
When
did they come out?
Do you know, Carl?
Well, they're about to announce number 16, so probably
I don't know.
2003?
They were still pretty new, because a lot of the video in this particular story I saw, people had like the Nokia phones or like the Palm Pilots or the
right.
BlackBerry. I had a Palm Pilot. All of those things. So listen, this is a group of parents that ABC had come talk on like a panel, more or less, discussing what age kids should have a cell phone. Listen.
Right. I think that it is a distraction.
For what? A distraction for what, though?
They put the phone on silence, and then they just text each other, and it's the new passing notes in the classroom.
Did you mean to tell me that you haven't developed your child to have the discipline to not do that?
Yeah, because kids are kids. That's what I'm trying to say.
And that would be my argument, too. Yeah, you can put boundaries in place, but kids are kids.
Who thinks they have that much control over their children when they're at school, that you've taught them the discipline not to do that? Of course they're going to do that if they've got access to the technology. That's why I support personally, and I know the schools will never do it because they don't have discipline in schools anymore, is one of two things. Either no phones are allowed in the classroom, or I've heard the argument, but what if there's an emergency and my kid needs to contact me? You put those little lockers right inside of each door. The kids, when they come into the classroom, they turn their phone off and they stick it in that locker. Teacher watches each one of them with their name on it. Everybody's phone is in there. And if you're caught with it outside of that locker without teacher's permission, you're going to the office. And that ends that problem. It ends one of the problems anyway.
I would agree with that. I think putting it in like a bucket at the beginning of the classroom when you walk in, I think is a good idea. But I can just see the argument that they would try to make, which is, well, then we have to take classroom time away from teaching, and we have to allocate more time at the end of that particular period, because now we're going to have to go sort through all the phones out of the bucket and make sure each person has their correct phone. Like, I can just hear the way that they would sit there and try to spin that and be like, this is impossible. How dare you sit there and try to say we should do this?
And when referring back to that individual, you'd have to probably use the correct pronouns, if I had to guess. Whoever
them or...
Well, whoever the snowflake is that would complain about that. Kids do not need cell phones in classrooms specifically. Even if you're still letting them use them in the hallway in their brief 4-minute break between classes. I'm completely opposed to that idea. What parent would go up and argue? I'd love to know. Leave us a listener comment. If you've got an opinion on this and you're a parent or you've come across it recently, what possible argument could there be for kids to have access to their phones during the entire school day? I'd love to know, because I can't imagine what it is. Are there occasionally emergencies? I'm certain there are. Are there phones in the office? Yes. They can go to the front desk like we used to.
Email.
And say, I need to call my mom.
Or you can just do the original, which was, you know, you pass a note and you would, that's like the original text messaging. I would fold my note all fancy and pass it. Or you take your graphic calculator and you would type, you know what I mean? Remember that? Am I?
You're right, boobies.
Or that, Carl. Or
what,
that.
What
that's what Carl was doing with his graphic calculator.
I don't know. I'm just saying that was like
Shell.
Another.
Shell oil.
Yeah, remember that one? Yeah.
With boobies.
Wow. Those were the days, huh?
Yeah, so go to the Odyssey app and click the microphone and leave us your comment on that. How did you handle that? I'd love to know. We'll play some of those back. I think zero phones in the classroom.
I agree.
Figure out a way to leave them in your locker. You can go out there in your break in your 4 minutes if you can make it back to your locker and check them, but they are not allowed in the classroom.
iPhones developed in 2003, not released till 2007.
Okay, 7, 8, I was close.
I know kids will always have them probably in the school. Whether or not they're allowed in classrooms is different, but I would even support probably not even having them at school. I don't know. I just think we've completely gone overboard with phones. Everyone's addicted to a degree, probably myself included. I'm not going to pretend I'm above. You know, I check my phone more than I'd like to admit.
Oh, yeah. We're all addicted to it these days.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a link to the world. I can't.
Yeah.
I find myself grabbing it for no reason and just checking to see if I've gotten any new messages or there's any breaking news somewhere in the world.
Like, think about the last time you sat at a stoplight and just sat there and just stared ahead.
No, you don't do that.
No, you look at your phone.
Yeah. You're not looking around. It's a problem. All right, we'll get to your comments. Doesn't have to be on that issue, but if you've got a thought on the debate with Trump and what he needs to do, just leave us a message. Carl will get it immediately down here. We will listen to it off the air, and then we'll pick the ones that we're going to play. So go ahead and do that. We'll take a look at it coming up here just a couple of minutes. All right, we're going to be back right after this.
Look, you can talk about maybe she should have had more guts about this or that and the other, but we're the president.
Right.
And Trump's not the president, and we're the president, and now it's going to be about this. But this is about winning. What most people don't give the Democrats enough credit for, all right, but we give the Republicans credit for, it's like, no, sometimes it's just about winning. And it doesn't matter how we look
right
at this moment. It's about winning.
Yeah, that is Quentin Tarantino. And the Hollywood director, producer, odd dude. There's no doubt about it. If you've watched his movies, you
loves
get that.
Feet.
Yeah.
What?
Very strange.
Yeah.
He has a foot fetish that he's openly acknowledged.
Watch his movies.
Anyway.
Or don't. I've seen some of his movies. That's weird.
I don't agree with this dude on anything politically, but he's right. I mean, the Democrats do what it takes to win, and Republicans often don't. They just don't. They will sacrifice their youngest child to win. The Democrats, that's just what they do, right? They win at all costs. They take party line votes. They force through crap like Obamacare. It doesn't matter to them what the cost is. Ultimately, they want to win. That's what they're doing with Kamala Harris, avoiding the media, because they know the only way for her to win is for people to the marginalized ones who are uneducated and just really dumb on politics, if they see how much of an airhead she is, she loses. They got to keep her safe. His comment, that conversation was a long one with Bill Maher. They also got into, Tarantino said, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you about a Fox News host because you've had her on your air. And I don't know how she does what she does. I love what she does. But then he drops another truth bomb on MSNBC. Listen to this soundbite.
Fox does hire Jessica Tarloff. And they put her on their big show. And she says what she says against the Fox audience, against the panel, and especially against Jeanine Pirro. All right. As far as I can see, that is the hardest job on television. All right. And also, they kind of maybe not Jeanine, but they all kind of like her. So they're not going to, they don't go ballistic on her. All right. They keep it respectful. And, you know, and so here's the thing. One, she's kind of amazing. And I think it's one of the hardest jobs that there is out there. But two, how come there isn't that person on MSNBC?
Right. Well, I asked the same question. And that says a lot about the left, because MSNBC is a branch of the left.
Yeah. Little honesty there from Quentin Tarantino while they're heaping praise on the Democrat who's on the primetime show at Fox. They wonder why MSNBC doesn't do the Michael Steele doesn't count. He switched parties a long time ago. You can't count people like that who were former Republicans. There's no strong conservative voice because they're afraid. We'll be back. Just a couple minutes. Former Senator John Lampen coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Look, you can talk about maybe she should have had more guts about this or that and the other, but we're the president.
Right.
And Trump's not the president, and we're the president, and now it's going to be about this. But this is about winning. What most people don't give the Democrats enough credit for, all right, but we give the Republicans credit for, it's like, no, sometimes it's just about winning. And it doesn't matter how we look
right
at this moment. It's about winning.
Yeah, that is Quentin Tarantino, and the Hollywood director, producer. Odd dude. There's no doubt about it. If you've watched his movies, you
loves
get that.
Loves feet.
Yeah.
What?
Very strange.
Yeah.
He has a foot fetish that he's openly acknowledged.
Watch his movies.
Anyway.
Or don't.
No,
or don't. I've seen some of his movies. That's weird.
I don't agree with this dude on anything politically, but he's right. I mean, the Democrats do what it takes to win, and Republicans often don't. They just don't. They will sacrifice their youngest child to win. The Democrats, that's just what they do, right? They win at all costs. They take party line votes. They force through crap like Obamacare. It doesn't matter to them what the cost is. Ultimately, they want to win. That's what they're doing with Kamala Harris, avoiding the media, because they know the only way for her to win is for people to, the marginalized ones who are uneducated and just really dumb on politics. If they see how much of an airhead she is, she loses. They got to keep her safe. His comment, that conversation was a long one with Bill Maher. They also got into, Tarantino said, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you about a Fox News host, because you've had her on your air, and I don't know how she does what she does. I love what she does. But then he drops another truth bomb on MSNBC. Listen to this soundbite.
Fox does hire Jessica Tarloff, and they put her on their big show, and she says what she says against the Fox audience, against the panel, and especially against Jeanine Pirro. All right. As far as I can see, that is the hardest job on television. All right. And also, they kind of like, maybe not Jeanine, but they all kind of like her. So they're not going to, they don't go ballistic on her. All right. They keep it respectful. And so here's the thing. One, she's kind of amazing, and I think it's one of the hardest jobs that there is out there. But two, how come there isn't that person on MSNBC?
Right. Well, I asked the same question. And that says a lot about the left, because MSNBC is a branch of the left.
Yeah. Little honesty there from Quentin Tarantino while they're heaping praise on the Democrat who's on the primetime show at Fox. They wonder why MSNBC doesn't do the... Michael Steele doesn't count. He switched parties a long time ago. You can't count people like that who were former Republicans. There's no strong conservative voice because they're afraid. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Former Senator John Lampen coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.